Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Good morning. Can I have everyone's attention? Good morning. Thank you for coming so early, and it's extra early because of daylight saving. Where's my... Oh, goodness me. Now we're in a disco. Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. So good morning, everybody. I'm Anne Burrows, and I'd like to welcome you to the 2017 ICM session. And this is the opportunity where we tell you, for those of you who don't know about the ICM, we give you a very quick overview of what the ICM is, a very quick overview of how governance in the broader movement at the international level works. We will also take you through what the main issues are that are coming up at the ICM this year, and then we will have an opportunity towards the end for you to sort of swivel your chairs around and get together in little small breakout groups to discuss some of the key issues that are before us. So what I'd like to do first of all is have the ICM delegation stand up and introduce themselves. So, Jeff, why don't we start with you? Oh, I mean, come on. And we're mic'd, so we have to. That's why we're so loud in a small room.
I'm Jeff Bachman. Would you like anything more than
that's
that?
That's fine.
Okay.
So we're loud in a small room because it's being recorded, which is why. Donnie.
Hi, I'm Donnie Beyer.
I'm Mike O'Reilly.
Samantha Shoemaker.
Benya Kraus.
Deborah Domas.
Just the delegation.
Oli Tostanowski.
Ilgu Özler.
Annie Roberts.
Margaret Huang.
So this is the team that is tasked with two things. The one is to prepare the ICM delegation so that when we go to the ICM in Rome in August, we will have a very, very clear sense of what our section needs us to say. And the delegation, as you will learn later on in the presentation, is also the group that will be interacting with all of you and running the consultations with all of you on getting your input and feedback into the development of what the section of what AIUSA's positions will be on. So we don't have the opportunity this morning to go through every single one of the resolutions or every single one of the issues. Currently, as it stands, there are 37 resolutions coming to the ICM. So it's an extraordinary amount of work. We have a strong delegation. I think we're very, very lucky this year. And with that, I am going to hand it over to Mike.
All right. Thank you, Anne. So let us begin with what is the ICM, the International Council Meeting. The International Council Meeting, in some ways you can think of it as the International AGM. We are about to be voting on resolutions at a session shortly after this one. That is one of the main functions of the International Council Meeting. The Council Meeting, unlike the AGM, the Council Meeting meets every 2 years, and it's composed of delegates that are chosen by their representative sections and structures to represent them at the International Council Meeting. One of the functions at the ICM is to vote on resolutions, as Anne's just described. Another focus is to elect the international board. So the ICM, the delegates of Amnesty from around the world, elect the international board, which in turn hires the secretary general, which in turn hires the staff of the international secretariat. Very similar to the structure we have here, where the board of AIUSA is elected by the members of AIUSA. The board in turn hires the executive director, who in turn hires and supervises the staff of Amnesty USA. In addition to the International Council meeting, there is annually a meeting of the chairs of each of the Amnesty sections. There will be a meeting of the chairs, and it's a concurrent meeting with the section directors that will be coming up at the end of this month that Anne and Margaret will be attending. And that is another opportunity where policy is discussed. So what does the ICM do? The ICM is the highest decision-making body in the organization. It sets the human rights policies and strategies for the organization at the very mega level. So when Amnesty International decided to expand its mission at various points over the years, it is a decision of the International Council meeting. When Amnesty decided to work on the death penalty in the 70s, that was the result of a decision of the ICM. When Amnesty decided to expand the focus of its work from civil and political rights to encompass economic, social, and cultural rights, that was a decision that was made by the International Council meeting. It sets the organizational strategy for the organization, the governance structure, which we'll be talking about more in a moment, some of the ways in which the organization is structured, and then the finances of the organization. How do we run and afford this movement? It elects, as I mentioned, the International Board and other international bodies. And then finally, it is an accountability body. Each section is ultimately responsible to the International Council meeting. If a section is faltering to the point where it's not able to function, it's actually up to the ICM to decide whether that section can participate fully in the International Council meeting. So it is an accountability function. I'm going to now turn to Donnie to take us through some of the next pieces.
Thanks, Mike. So these are Amnesty's current strategic goals. Sort of, you can think of it as our global strategic plan. This was adopted at the 2015 ICM. And the global strategic goals run from 2016 through 2019. They can be updated in the intervening ICM year, which of course is this upcoming ICM 2017. But it doesn't look like we'll be doing that at this ICM, but that's possible. So goal one is around reclaiming freedoms. These include things like ensuring that human rights defenders are safe and supported, that people know and can claim their rights, and that people can speak out, organize, and challenge injustice, the right to protest, something we're working on a lot here in the US. Goal two, securing equal rights for all. This includes things like ensuring that discrimination and identity-based violence are reduced, that progress towards equality on the basis of gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression is achieved, and that economic, social, and cultural rights are better realized in people's lives. Our third strategic goal, responding to crisis, is ensuring that those affected by or fleeing conflict, torture, and persecution have increased access to protection and assistance, and that civilians are better protected through effective action by international, regional, and national institutions and mechanisms. Goal four, on ensuring accountability, that human rights, governance, and accountability are strengthened at the national level, with the idea of goal four being that that would be done in the context of the first three goals, that accountability would be strengthened in the context of the first three goals, and that regional, second piece is that regional and global human rights machinery are reinforced where national human rights protection is failing. So goal five, so the first four are our human rights goals, our human rights priorities. The fifth goal is our organization, our internal priority, which is maximizing our resources and engagement. This is a big one, this is a big goal, there's a lot here. So it ensures that the idea is that we want AI to be larger, stronger, and more diverse movement with a greater capacity to achieve human rights impact. And that within our work, we want active participation of a more diverse constituency at all levels. So who's it go to now? Jeff.
I'm going to stand. So probably the biggest issue we're going to be tackling at this year's ICM is reform of our international governance system. In 2013, the ICM decided and tasked the International Board to review our governance structures and to come back to the 2017 ICM with some proposals for reform. The concerns prompting the reform was that our decision-making processes were unwieldy and clumsy, that they weren't particularly strategic in their focus, that there was weak accountability across to the various bodies between and across the bodies in our movement, and thirdly, that we had some pretty strong barriers to really full participation of all the entities that make up the International Council. So the sort of the hallmark or the centerpiece is that we're going to, the proposal is to replace the ICM with a body called the Global Assembly. And the Global Assembly will not only replace the ICM, as the slide says, it'll also replace the chairs forum as well. Instead of having a chairs forum every year and an ICM every 2 years, there will be a Global Assembly every year. So we'll meet annually and then also continue to work in between meetings. In terms of what the authority of the Global Assembly and the International Board is, the Global Assembly will still retain its primary role as the largest decision or as the highest decision-making body within the organization, and with the International Board accountable to the Global Assembly for implementing those decisions. A big change is right now delegations that go to the ICM, the smallest delegations are 4, the largest are 6. We're slimming down the meeting. Again, hoping keeping more focus on strategic decisions, and so we're going to be having 3-person delegations is the proposal. And probably the most contentious talked about aspect is changes in voting rights. Right now, there is a spread, a range of how many votes an entity can have. The smallest entities get 1 vote at the ICM. The largest gets 6. And the proposal now, there's actually 2 proposals. One is that there will just be one section, 1 vote. So everybody has equal voting power. The alternate is that everybody gets at least 1 vote. If you're a section, you can get a 2nd vote. There's a difference between, we have different entities, we have structures, we have sections, we have national offices and so forth, but at this point, you're a section, which is sort of the largest or highest level type of organization within AI, you could get 2 votes, and then you can get a 3rd vote if you have more than 1% of the total membership across the world. So reducing that spread from 1 to 6 to 1 to 3. Another big proposal is at this point, when the International Board makes a decision to take action on a section or structure that is struggling, they can suspend them, they can terminate them, they can put them under international administration, but there is a right of appeal. And for right now, under our current statute, the appeal would go to what's called the MAC, the Membership Appeals Committee, and that is a body that is made up of people voted on that by the International Council meeting, and they review the decision and give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. The new statute would place the MAC with a new process where the International Nominating Committee would select a roster of 12 experts, and if somebody files appeals, the entity that's appealing the decision would get 1 member of that, the International Board would get 1 member on that panel, and then the 3rd person would be appointed by the chair of the Global Assembly, who is also elected by the Global Assembly. And there was, at one point, there was going to be a resolution to try to build into the governance architecture measures to address gender and diversity. Decision has been made to pull that out, and instead there will be a new resolution dealing just with that topic and that concern. So this is sort of what things will look like in the accountability measures here. So again, you have, you know, this is us over here, we're the entities. We elect the global our assembly or have our representation at the global assembly. The idea is that there's accountability from the global assembly to the entities, and also we as a section have accountability to the rest of the movement. The international board is accountable to the general assembly. The nominations committee, which helps pick candidates for the international board, is a committee of the general assembly, as is the preparatory committee, which is basically puts the agenda together for the meeting. There's a third committee, which is the finance and audit committee, which is a joint committee that's accountable to both the international board and to the general assembly. I think that's me.
Thank you, Jeff. I should also just point out for those of you who haven't been around for as long as all of the rest of us have, Jeff is a former chair of AIUSA, and he has been on the International Board's Governance Committee, I think for, is it 5 years, 6 years? Six. So he's been really, really, really integrally involved in thinking through the governance reform proposal. So we've been incredibly lucky in our section to have had that capacity and to have had his input there. So I'm going to talk very briefly about organization issues. The first is a resolution that has been brought by the International Board, which is about coordinated budgeting by the IS, the International Secretariat, and AI sections. And very briefly, essentially what they're trying to do is to have a unified sort of set of accounts and a unified set of financials, because there are different sections that have their budgets on sort of different, some have their financial year goes from October to September, others go from June to June, and then others are a calendar year. So basically, in order to keep the, it's much easier for the International Secretariat and frankly for the entire movement for us all to be on the same budgeting calendar, and the proposal here is that it would be on the calendar year. So that is one of the organizational resolutions that has been brought by the International Board. And then there are three, I'm going to talk about three other organizational resolutions, which are in some senses, in many senses they're similar, they have similarities. I'm not going to go through every single one of them, but there's a very strong possibility that three of them will be combined. As you heard in those of you who were in the working party yesterday, we have, as I said earlier, we have 37 resolutions at the coming up the ICM, and between now and the ICM, there's a process where several of the resolutions will be consolidated so that we know that at least these three resolutions will almost certainly be consolidated into one of them. AIUSA's resolution is funding our global presence, and essentially what we've asked there, the impetus for that is a greater level of transparency and accountability in the way in the kind of data and the information that we get about how the assessment is spent and what the proportion is of, I mean, it sort of comes from a place of people feeling that there's not sufficient transparency in the kind of data that we've been given. The other issue is that, don't have enough time to go into too much, but that's essentially what it is. The role of AI sections and structures, supporting AI sections worldwide, those are quite similar in some respects. The first is also a financial accounting, a need for greater financial accounting. As we've moved towards the Global Transition Program, and as the IS has devolved out from London into regional offices and hubs around the world, there is concern that there's not sufficient money going into funding the sections and the structures, and that possibly a larger allocation of resources is going to the hubs and the regionals. And then supporting AI sections worldwide is sort of essentially a proposal that is going to look at capacity building needs for sections. So how to make sections stronger, how to have their organizational efficiency stronger, their governance stronger, how they can be better supported in terms of growth and as in terms of, you know, member growth and donor growth, funding growth. Thank you.
So the the next set of topics is human rights policy. That's fine, yeah. So quite a lot here. We didn't expect to have quite this many resolutions. This isn't even actually all of them on human rights policy. So really briefly on each one of these. So the first two are the related topics of military occupation. We, AIUSA, submitted a resolution calling on the movement to develop a policy on military occupation, and AI France and AI Spain, AI Greece also submitted a resolution to call for a general policy on military occupation, while AI France and AI Spain submitted resolutions specifically related to what policy we might adopt around the occupied Palestinian territories. So these, it's actually a total of four resolutions. We're in AIUSA and the other three sections that I mentioned are in the process of negotiating a joint submission, which will actually be focused just on a general policy on occupation. We have two resolutions on global drug control policies, one from AI Mexico and one from AI Greece. AI Mexico's resolution calls for the development of a policy. AI Greece's does as well, although it sort of assumes that part of that final policy will call on states to decriminalize small amounts of possession and consumption of drugs. We've had quite a few conversations at this AGM about this topic. As by way of background, the 2015 ICM made a decision to call on the IS, the International Secretariat, to develop a study on the human rights impacts of drug control policies. And so that was published in December, and we're all reviewing this very robust report. The thinking is that this upcoming ICM will call on the IS and the IB to develop a draft policy that then will be distributed out to sections, and we'll have a further round of consultation on the proposed policy draft. We have another resolution from several sections. I think there's eight or so sections that are all jointly submitting a resolution calling on Amnesty to review its policy on abortion. So currently, our policy is, I think, called AI policy on select aspects of abortion. It was adopted in 2007 by the International Board after extensive consultations in sections. It's considered to be sort of minimum standards. It only calls for states to ensure that women have access to abortion in cases of rape, incest, and sexual assault. There's a concern. Well, first of all, since a decade ago, international law and standards have moved beyond those sort of so-called minimum standards, and so there's a question as to whether or not we should review and update our policy. Additionally, there's a concern that by continuing to have a policy that is limited, that is so narrow, that we send the message as a human rights organization that is an acceptable standard. There's also concerns about the reality that even where women only have access to these so-called select aspects, that there's not access in practice. We have a resolution from New Zealand, who else? I think the UK, on developing further our work on human rights and climate change. We had a discussion at the last ICM about this topic, and that led to the formation of an international working group on this topic that has been sort of scoping further how we might address this issue. And so there's a desire to continue to move this forward on the part of AI UK and AI New Zealand. We also have a resolution from the International Board on developing a policy on further developing our policy, I should say, on elections and democracy. It's another topic that we've discussed quite a bit at this meeting. Concerns here center around ensuring that Amnesty maintains its impartiality, both real and perceived. I forgot what else I was going to say. Resolution from, is that in the right order? Yeah, resolution from AI Luxembourg on the rights of people with disabilities. It calls on us to continue to develop our policy, develop a policy on the rights of people with disabilities. Specifically, it says to focus action on the right to freedom from torture, cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, the right to freedom from exploitation and abuse, and protection of the integrity of the person. Banks and the arms trade. I forget who this one is from. Luxembourg as well. So this resolution calls on us to think about how we might incorporate pressure on financial institutions as it relates to arms trade. And so it's a recognition that arms are not made or sold without financing, without some involvement of financial institutions. And so I think the idea is to work to pressure financial institutions to ensure that they have the mechanisms in place to identify illegal, when they might be involved in illegal arms deals. Further research on sex work issues. This is a resolution from AI France. Starting in 2013, the movement engaged in a conversation around how we might look to protecting the human rights of sex workers. So we had about a 2-year consultation and discussion that was extremely extensive. And obviously controversial. And we ended up at the 2015 ICM, so the last ICM, adopting a resolution that called on the International Board to develop a policy on the human rights of sex workers that includes calling on states to decriminalize both those who buy, sell, and those who are sort of so-called third parties that engage in sex work. So that's like, schedulers, management of sex workers. This would be like third parties. This was a recognition that you can't ensure the human rights of sex workers unless you bring sex work sort of into the open and allow sex workers to be able to interface with law enforcement should they face abuse. Or other ill treatment, and so the French resolution asks for us to do more research in countries that have either a fully decriminalized model or that have a partially decriminalized model, and do that before we sort of undertake a lot of work on the issue.
Thank you, Donnie. And now we want to stop. That was a lot. That was a lot of information. And there was more, right? There are many, many more resolutions than we're even able to talk about in this space. So let's stop here and see if there are any questions that folks have. As Anne mentioned, the next thing that we're going to be moving into is actually breaking into some groups and having some conversations about some of these issues. But do you have any questions? And if you do, I'm going to bring the microphone because we are recording this session, so I'm going to want to get your question on the mic. Oh, and Caitlin's going to help us do that. Thank you. Hillary.
Thank you. Hi. Going back to Jeff's part of the presentation on the transition from the ICM to the Global Assembly, I would be interested in your thoughts about what would actually make the International Council meeting vote to abolish itself and speculate maybe about how the balance of power between the large and small sections exists now, when the big sections have the 6 votes and the smaller sections have 4, and how that plays out through the one section, one vote issue. What are the pros and cons for the large sections to give up what they have now?
You know, why would the ICM vote to abolish itself? Because that's what it voted to do. You know, well, let's put it this way. They voted for a governance reform proposal. We've been talking about the Global Assembly almost from the onset. So, you know, it's not like we're going to show up at the ICM and say, ha, here's your new model. You know, vote it up or down. No, they know what's coming, and there has not been, you know, a huge backswell of, you know, resistance to the idea of moving to the Global Assembly model. In terms of this changing the spread in voting rights, so we're talking from right now where the range is from 1 to 6 to a range from which there's 1 to 3. Certainly, you know, the smaller sections that are in support of it feel like it gives them a more equal voice at the table. A lot of the support for it comes from, but not all the support. As to why bigger sections would give them up their voting power, you would have to ask them.
Is there another question?
You know, Lana, sorry, I caught you in the midst of something. You know, we have the benefit here of Lana Verin, who's the chair of AI Canada, and she's actually one of the Canada is one of the largest sections, and they're actually in support of one section, one vote. So I think that it might be helpful, Lana, if you can just give a short answer about what the rationale is for Canada to sort of give up the power, essentially the voting power that it has now, and why you'll be supporting one person, one vote. I mean, one section, one vote. Sorry, it's very early for me.
Because we're Canada? No. thanks for the question, Anne. We actually have a bit of a, I don't know, it's about a page and a half that I don't think this morning I could articulate as well as I'd like. Happy to share it. But essentially it breaks down to just the balance of power. I don't know if that was the terminology you used, Hillary, but just in terms of the North and the South, just bringing that equity to the sections for their input to have the same weight as ours. That's a very high level summary. I'm happy to share the paper. It's certainly not a secret, but that's a high level. If there's questions, I'm happy to take more. We've broken it down at a number of different levels as well, as to why we feel it's the right thing for us to support.
Okay, we have 2 questions here, Angie and Alice.
Angie Holgus, Madison, Wisconsin. I'm sorry I was out of the room if you addressed this already. So there was a thought that the human rights policy, one section, one vote, but in the financing resolutions that come before the movement that it wouldn't be one section, one vote. I don't know if that's just a thought out there or if that's a discussion or if somebody could, like the greater financing sections, it wouldn't break down that way. Someone could talk about that.
Carried through. So there was at one point that there was a third option that was being considered called the hybrid model, where sections would retain the greater voting power on certain issues. And that has been abandoned. However, there are, and I'm looking up furiously. Yeah, actually it's right here. So there are certain decisions that will require a 2/3 majority. So whatever voting model we of the 2 options that we choose, unless somebody comes up with a third one at the ICM, the 2/3 will require 2/3 vote of the voting members would be to amend the statute to amend the financial assessment model, so to what you were referring to, Angie, to dismiss the board, to dismiss the chair of the Global Assembly, and to confer voting rights at the Global Assembly to any person or entity additional to the standing representatives. So there has been thought at times of having stakeholders attend our meetings and also being given voting rights as well. So those are the, everything else will be simple majority. These areas, you need two-thirds majority.
Okay, and now Alice.
Got my sweater caught here, sorry. I'm Alice Dalla from the Women's Human Rights Co-Group. And I was surprised yesterday to see this resolution that says removal of the international networks from the structure. This is not a surprise to me that that is under discussion, because the International Women's Human Rights Network was watching this warily all the time it was being discussed at the international level. I heard you say something this morning about having moved to a resolution or something like that, rather than included in the whole structure as it stands right now. I'd like to know, what are the plans for including women's human rights globally, not just in the hubs that care about it? And we need also a way to communicate with each other across the whole movement, so that women's work isn't fragmented into what's important in one hemisphere as opposed to another continent or whatever. Can you talk a little bit about what are the plans for including women's work? It was very hard for us to get into Amnesty permanently. For a long time, we had to push for maybe a two-year campaign on something of interest to women, or maybe a few women's urgent actions. But we, as 50% of the population of the world, think we need to be included permanently in the structure of this organization.
I'll take a stab at answering that. Just for the resolutions that are included in the resolutions package, you know, those kind of got the kernel of that was done by the GovCon, which then went through the governance program, which then went through the international board before we got these final ones. And to be perfectly honest with you, I did not see this or remember this being part of the discussion at the governance committee level. What I can commit to you is we've got a governance committee call this week on the 14th, and I'm going to raise that question and find out what exactly was intended by that and how that got there. So I can get back to you. Absolutely.
Alice, the other point just to mention was that it actually caught us by surprise, because there was no discussion about it at the ICM last year. The resolution on diversity that the international board is bringing will do something of that, but I don't think it's going to address this issue very specifically. So it caught us all by surprise.
We have time for one more question, if there is one. Otherwise, we have one more question.
The governance structure, Michael Greenberg, I'm CFO for the US section. Amnesty USA right now makes 15% of the IS's budget, and so moving to a one section, one vote, although Lana's arguments and items appeal to me too, half the Canadian in me, But it's been looked at before with items like the United Nations, and we all know the challenges with the UN, with one country, one vote versus where the UN's funding comes from and the struggle they have when the US government has pulled out or stopped funding the UN at different times. So this is a path that's been well trod, and I don't know if there is a solution that came out of it, but the American half of me says that if we're supplying 15% of the budget, I can see a problem in the future where a one section, one vote might compel the largest funding sections to really disgorge more of their budget than they're doing now, which could be a problematic long-term solution for it. So it's not really a question, more of a comment, but you've got your work cut out for you trying to balance those two.
All right, well, does anybody want to speak to that?
I mean, I think it's important to remember that even under the current ICM model, with the voting allocation the way it is that nothing gets, working parties at the ICM are still one section, one vote. So nothing gets out of the working party without it having the one section, one vote support. And similarly, it can be defeated by a one section, one vote model in the working party, and you can't even make it to the final voting plenary where, you know, bigger sections have more votes. And right, and we're really talking about like five, six, seven sections that have the maximum number of six votes. And then a similarly small number at the bottom that have only two, and then your structures that only have one. So the vast majority of sections have roughly three. And so it's not like there's a vastly disproportionate amount of power in the voting plenary. And again, in the working parties operate on the one section, one vote. So that's a check to any sort of unequal distribution of votes.
All right. Well, thank you, Donnie. And we're now going to move into the discussion portion of this morning. And we have breakout sessions. We have two rooms next to us. Those of you who participated in the working parties yesterday know that that's in one of them is where the lunch was, and one is down the hall from us. So we can keep two working groups, two breakout groups in this room. We can have one on one side of the room, one on the other side of the room, and then we can move some of the other ones down there. But we are going to need to bring you all back here. So you're going to have about 20 minutes to talk about whichever issue you want to talk about among the ones that we're going to highlight, and then we're going to come back here and pull it together. So the issues that we had talked about pulling out for conversation that seemed to be of greatest interest to the folks in AIUSA were these five. But I think what we can do is get a show of hands to see, do we actually have enough people interested in these topics to see to determine whether it's worth having a group on it. So one would be focusing on the new governance model that Jeff has been describing and we've been talking about. A second would be talking about military occupations and the various resolutions related to that. A third is on the decriminalization of drugs. A fourth group talking about elections and democracy policy. And then a fifth group on amnesty and civil disobedience. So those are the issues. Can we get a show of hands of these five, and you can only choose one. We don't want people wandering back and forth because there's limited time. So of those five topics, who would want to be in a group talking about the governance model? Just raise your hand so we can see. I see maybe four hands. Okay. Military occupations. Can we see who would want to discuss that? About six hands maybe. Decriminalization of drugs. Two hands. Elections and democracy. I see four. Civil disobedience. And another five or six. Okay. So the drugs one didn't seem to really have a critical mass to have a conversation, so I might suggest that we drop that one. But on the other hand, if the two of you really want to have that conversation, you can really go in the hallway and have it. It's not a problem. So can we have the governance model will be over here so that they're... All right, thank you, everybody. Thank you for participating in these breakout sessions. I know from walking around to all of the sessions that the conversations were really good, and we're going to take that as part of the feedback that the ICM delegation is going to be using in as we consider these resolutions ourselves. And now Donnie's going to talk about some of the other next steps that the delegation is going to be taking as it prepares for the ICM.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, so we have the things that we're doing here at this AGM, but then also what's coming after we leave today. So we have this session this morning. Later on today at 12:35, Jeff will be leading us in a more comprehensive discussion of the global governance reform proposals that we talked about a little bit today this morning. After the AGM, the delegation will be facilitating a consultation in the section. We are not exactly sure what the opportunity is going to look like at this point. It'll probably include a collection of webinars, conference calls, even perhaps an online survey, and perhaps some AIUSAD discussions. If you want to ensure that you get plugged in to this process as it moves forward, please email us, icm2017@aiusa.org. We'll make sure that you get notice of any of the opportunities that are available. Yeah, and so the priority subcommittee, which is a committee that facilitates consultations on planning and planning and policy questions, will also be conducting its own consultation roughly at the same time on the policy on drugs that we talked about a little bit. So look out for that opportunity as well. You can email, if you're particularly interested in that conversation, you can email the priority subcommittee at priorities@aiusa.org. And again, the ICM email address is here. So thank you all very much.
And in the mode of dynamic governance, we'll continue into the next session, which begins at 9:20 in the big room next to us. So please go and vote. Thank you all. Yeah, they are calling. They're anxious to get you.